Culture eats strategy for lunch, and informed cultures drive decisions and inspire action. At the Data Culture Podcast, we talk with execs, visionaries, and data experts so that you may move from idea to outcome in your own data culture journey. Welcome to the Data Culture Podcast. My name is Sid Atkinson, data consulting leader with over 21 years in data.
And I'm Lee Harper, AI human with over a decade doing AI bits and pieces.
And with us today is my friend and neighbor, Ian Stahl. He happens to work for Informatica. Ian, introduce yourself, please.
Yeah. Hey, Sid, Lee, my name's Ian Stahl. I'm Senior Director of Product Management here at Informatica in the Data Governance and Privacy Group. And in that capacity, I run the data democratization portfolio at Informatica. So that's data marketplaces integration with our data catalog and the rest of the IDMC service layer, as well as the data access management or data protection capability that we introduced earlier this year. So quite a bit going on here at Informatica land, but happy to talk to you guys about it.
So hot topics, right?
Yes, lots of hot topics. Indeed. Yeah. And Ian, like the, so we had another podcast with my buddy Arun, longtime friend. And the funny thing is, it's like when we had that podcast, hey, Arun, we've known each other for so long. We've been neighbors for so long. Like, why has it taken us this long to figure out a way to collaborate? And same thing, we've been neighbors for 10 years, and this is the first time we've actually done data stuff.
Apparently, our neighborhood has a lot of data people in it.
Yeah.
I was not aware of it. It's Austin, so it's a stick, right? You find a data person, so.
It's like brilliance attracts brilliance, so I wonder why they're around us then.
We should start a softball league, and we'd be the weakest team in the league somehow, I mean. But that'd be great. It's good to have all those people around too.
Oh, yeah.
To catch up with, yeah.
No, definitely makes it fun. We had, probably a month and a half ago, we went and grabbed coffee for the first time to talk tech and had some fun. And you and I with the gray hairs were reminiscing about all of these different products. Right. Yeah, Lee doesn't have the gray hair yet.
Should I mention how long I've been doing this? I think you mentioned it.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yes, do mention a little bit. Yeah, I mentioned I've been doing data for 21. So you've been in Informatica for 14. So
doing data management. I was counting this the other day. I've been doing data management for 18 years. But by way of background, I'm a software developer. So I'm an Austin-based software developer, been doing software development going back to the mid-90s. Right. Mm-hmm. So 28 years in software development, did enterprise software, content management, web portal, that stuff. Moved into master data management in the aughts, worked on that for a while, and then ended up at Informatica, worked in master data management here, then moved to data governance. I was the data governator here. The California people call me that.
Yeah.
But basically, I was the first data governance product manager at Informatica. And so I set the table for kind of what we were doing first with later with data governance and catalog. That was in the, 2014, 2015, very opportune time to come into the space. They were just transitioning, I think, the data governance practice to this kind of wild and woolly world of cloud, and basically had the opportunity to migrate that entire technology portfolio onto the cloud. And I'm the sort of beneficiary of that. I get to develop neat new capabilities, right? The data access capability, the data marketplace, some of these AI capabilities that we've launched under the CLAIRE banner.
Yeah.
Because we have this metadata infrastructure in the cloud that allows people to kind of sort of frictionally move data around to be able to achieve certain outcomes. That's what we're doing.
So let's hit the, not the hot take, but the hot topic. We started this whole conversation the other day around what does it mean to get your data ready for AI? So Ian, you've been doing this for a long time. What is that? There's so many different opinions. What does that mean to you?
Well, it's interesting because this is such a hot topic. It was like, I think our CEO, Amit Walia, was on CNBC last week talking about this exact thing. The lady asked him the same question, right? If he gets this question, then I get this question. We'll see how I do. What does it mean to get your data ready for AI? I feel like in certain ways, it's fashionable these days to basically like caveat everything with an AI. It's, hey, have you tried this new dessert topping for AI?
So X in the 90s, I in the aughts.
Yeah, right? I was about to say that the I stuff, everybody had I.
So I guess, though, what I would say is that we've had some, what our customers are telling us, and in fact, this came up just recently where I was on a webinar with a data scientist from a large energy services provider that we work with. And she was talking about how she spends all of her time doing data preparation and very little time basically doing modeling. And that a lot of the kind of mechanics of what she's doing, getting data. Oh, and by the way, I should mention her focus specifically was around NLP, right? So it's basically like what she's doing is she's getting the site inventory ready for the bore site and how they're going to set that up and what they need to be able to do that. And they're automating that using AIML, right? It was a very interesting domain problem, but they need to read the bill of materials and the manifest and things like that. And that's basically what she's training her model to do. Data quality is like a big piece of what she's trying to achieve. Without high quality data, she has to go back upstream and remediate all that. And then that's a huge problem for her. And it soaks up all of her time. And if we can take care of that for her, that's a big deal. But quality is a little different, I think, what you might think of as a traditional data quality, say for operational data or analytics data, things like that.
Yeah.
A lot of it is, honestly, like semantics and labeling. It's basically, if I'm going to source this data for this wellhead and this bore site, do I know that this data can be used in this geography? Can I source this data from the supplier? Is it available? Do I even know what a supplier is? Do I know how to qualify this? And that being able to tag, I guess you might say, the data with the language of the organization in a machine-readable way is a lot of what people are really talking about when it comes down to brass tacks and quality. So it gets down to things like semantic tagging, glossary, understanding the taxonomy of the domain, understanding the information space. And then within that, understanding things like the sensitivity of that data, the level of protection. And then the quality is nested inside of that in what you might traditionally think of as quality. I did profile this data and it has this frequency distribution. Yeah, that has utility for me. I can use it to train my model. I can use it right in my RAG or something like that.
But also real quick on the quality piece though, because this is one thing that it's funny. We always ask and in conversations, what does it mean to have your data ready for AI? And that you said pretty much went where 90% of folks go, which is quality first, right?
Yeah.
Like that's, but I also agree with one of our past podcast guests who said, stop like hounding the business over data quality. They know their data is quality. The difference here is like when we start using the data for different purposes, now quality has a new definition, right? If I'm the person in the field setting up, like thing I care most about is that equipment list I'm being given to go set up the field. I don't really care where you ordered it from. I don't care how much you paid for it. I don't care how much, but I don't care about other things upstream that went into. Now, all I care about is this list. So it's like silos of how the flow of information happens in the silo is usually where the business is determined quality. But then when we're matching it up on the entirety of the life cycle, that's when we have new quote unquote quality problems that are interjected, mostly because we're tying it all together for the first time.
This is the thing. And to your point about data quality, I would say data quality is relative because there are definitely ways to parameterize and score it and things like that. But I would say that for, say, this energy provider that we were talking to earlier, she definitely, like when she's sourcing the data, whoever she's sourcing it from, the quality of that data was good enough for whatever they were doing. It may not be suitable for what she's doing. So that really quality comes down to like whether it's fit for purpose for this particular application.
Yep.
And then if you think about that, then AIML, right, and Gen AI, like natural language processing stuff that she was doing, is a type of application of use for which the data needs to be fit for purpose. And qualification comes down to that. And to me, I think that's really like where it comes in. When Informatica talks about getting your data ready for AI, really what they mean is that there's a way for you to qualify that data in terms of its semantic content, in terms of its purpose, in terms of its intent, in terms of its ownership, in terms of its provenance, and then in terms of sort of the quantitative factors around like its profiling statistics and things like that. In aggregate is what I think people mean when they talk about data quality.
And one of the challenges we're talking about, we've always had with the data science space for the decade that I've been in it and before that, is most of the data is prepared for some analytical purpose, right? There's some data model that feeds some business purpose, but in then taking data science as a very broad field involving many kind of subdomains, one of the commonalities is that we have to pull all that data together. We need a person's full customer journey. We need a bore site's full information. We need the entire chain of supply chain, which may never have before been done because you've got all these different models that sit solving their business problems, but now we've got this overarching thing and these have never had
common primary keys or anything between them.
Yeah, that's a great point. So I actually might even frame it a little bit differently, because your point about the data may start its life out in an analytics model, right, is well taken, which is to say that the data often initially is prepared for some analytics purpose. So the first data product, if you will, may be the analytics model and the inputs into the analytics model that was generated by the data sciences and data engineering team, right, for some purpose, for some analytic purpose. Like I'm going to build my actuarial value table for this insurance product over this period of time, and I'm getting that right. But in fact, actually, you're sourcing the data from upstream. The data is like a kind of exhaust gas of some operational process that's being executed. So it's like the bill of materials for the bore site is actually coming from the supplier that their ERP system is providing when they're sourcing the data from the contract. Oh, but it has to be married to, say, a bore site, such an interesting domain to talk about because it's so freaking obscure. But there's a lot of geological information about the bore site, like what's its geospatial attributes, what's the pressure sitting at the bore head, and things like that. I'm not an oil guy, but we're in Texas, so there's a lot of oil people around.
Yeah,
but it is so arcane. There's so much arcana in there that you can that basically qualify what the thing is that determine basically like when the team shows up to drill the well. Do they have the equipment they need, or are they going to be sitting on their hands for a week? Which the equipment to show up, and you have to make sure that's good. That facility is a function of that quality, but the data actually may be coming from way, way upstream. So when I say the provenance of the data, often we're really talking about, hey, the supplier sources data. They sent me this inventory. This is the equipment that I have, right? And I'm going to be able to use this. And I think this is correct because the data they reported to me is correct. And that upstream process is actually the thing that the analytics is set up for. And then subsequently, people can use that data for all kinds of other things. This is the thing, is data that's been highly qualified, lead to your point about for analytics, right, is very high utility across a broad range of potential cases. But I think often, and this is where it gets to the sort of the organizational culture around it, which is if nobody wants to share their data, then you never realize those value multipliers out of it. You just do all the work and don't get any benefit. But most of the customers we talk to are interested in getting the most benefit for the least amount of work, not the other way around. So being able to repurpose that data, share that data, that's an important dimension of what we're trying to do. But to do that, you have to have this kind of common language around the utility of the data, the value of the data.
Yeah.
And this is why I think we were talking earlier about data products. Run the marketplace service on the cloud. Data product is formalized, I guess you might say, is like a metadata.
Actually, before we go to the data product, because I'm going to ask you a follow-up question. But when we talk about like getting data ready for AI, you mentioned a couple of things. So provenance, so the classic data lineage question.
Lineage, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
then having like semantic understanding of it, like that data, what it is.
Glossaries, taxonomies. Like that, yeah.
So those are two key vectors. And then just also, what might we understand without having to go deep dive statistical analysis, but how might systems and processes generate our understanding of the distributions, the categories that exist within that data? So then we're talking about just metadata with a small M. I used to say metadata with a big M, metadata with a small M. Metadata with a small M to me is like the stuff that was distributions, volumes, things like that. Whereas metadata with a big M in my mind has always been like, what does this data mean to me as a person?
So. I didn't mean to inject the $5 word into the conversation of metadata, but I guess we're going there.
But it is important, right? It was a pain in the butt when we started with this 20 years ago. We had to like manually generate that. Now we can get to where this stuff is more available without actually having to do anything or very little.
I would say that. And I think the other thing that we're learning, and this has been a function of Informatica's approach to catalog for a long time, really going back to when we launched our catalog back in 2016, is they're interrelated.
Yeah.
Right. So for example, like you can tag you can tag an attribute like in your bore site master data model, right? Like the geospatial location, right? And you have to say that geospatial location has to have these criteria, right? It's not a stretch to say, hey, let's just have the machine deploy a rule out there and go measure the lat long and make sure that it's actually in there, or that's not a bunch of nulls, or it doesn't say Mickey Mouse or whatever. And guess what? that's not hard to do. You can do that. Yeah, we have an agent stuff that like runs that stuff for us in the back end. But the fact is, like, a lot of the metadata that's sitting in that catalog is basically state information that you can use to drive execution that makes sure that data is fit for purpose in certain standard ways. Yeah. And that automation is a big thing that we've been trying to innovate around really since we started in the metadata business back in 2016 and even before. And certainly, I think, on the cloud with the stuff that we're about developing today. What we're doing.
The follow-up question I have, so it's like when we talk about, say, what does it mean to get your data ready for AI? Mentioned several things, but quality was the first one. And then we talked a little bit about fit. The quality is determined by purpose, fit for use, right? And so then you started that kind of the follow-up question is like, how does Ian, or you can be Ian or Ian and peers, if you want to, define a data, the global Ian, it can be Ian the local or Ian the global, define a data product, because then that gets into how we might to look at like fit for purpose or purpose.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question because I recall that it came up in one of the other conversations that you had before, which I now I'm hooked on your pod. So I'm like listening all the time. Definitely going to be listening to this one.
Yes.
If you think about all the work that we've been doing around metadata and metadata management, and this idea that getting your data fit for purpose is reflected in the metadata itself, which is to say that that gal that's doing that natural language processing training on this bill of materials, she's training that data. Her ability to train that data is a function of the fact of how it's packaged, which is to say that somebody, there's labeling, right? Like you would get, like when you're buying cereal for your kids, right? And it's, oh, look at all the sugar in there. I'm definitely getting this. Yeah. But basically the packaging is metadata. And then that packaging informs you about its potential use, right? So if you want to make the thing that I think it from our perspective around my friends at Develop Marketplace and stuff is a data product is a metadata object that reflects the data's consumability. And that has quality, I think, is a big dimension of it. But there's a lot of other things about it, right? Like it's purpose. Mm-hmm. Like, why did you build this? Okay, Lee, we built Lee's analytics model and we've been chugging through it now for 6 months. But 5 of the 17 dimensions effectively are core master data attributes. Those could be repurposed. We could use those. We could just repackage that and give that to somebody else. And they could basically benefit from all the quality and profiling and stuff that we've done. Or this data has patient information in it. And we extracted out our EMR for some analytics. But if you want to use it for some demographic analysis, we can just obfuscate the PHI, right? And then you can use it for whatever you want. And that ability to package it for some purpose, that's fundamentally what we think a data product is, or how we think of it inside here, right?
Yeah. So now on a related to data product, because then everything, like it or not, everything has to be managed, governed. We'll mention the G word. Yeah.
That's the second $5 word in the conversation. Amazing.
All right, Ian, what does it mean when you use that phrase, who governs least? Governs best.
I'm going to give a hat tip to my former colleague, Darius Clayton, who was a startup founder, by the way. So like you guys, this was back in 2008. He was based in London City. He and his colleague started a company called Diaku. This was back in 2008. And if you remember back in those days, data governance was like really hot. And I don't know if you were in the market back then, but
yeah, Microsoft, I think, made two really bad acquisitions in the data governance space back then.
There were a lot of really bad acquisitions available.
Yes.
So I came to work with Darius because we bought his company. That turned out to be a good acquisition, just so you know. But the thing about it is he and his colleague had started with a consultancy like yours. And what they were doing was they were working with G-SIB banks to basically get their capital risk, their Basel III capital risk reporting attestation together, right? Mm-hmm. Which initially was like a completely paper process. So they're basically just running around with surveys, doing KDE inventories, and then they're like, this is insane. Why am I doing this? So then they did the thing, our software developer. It's like a software developer told me one time, it's if you have to do something twice, write a proc.
Yes.
So basically they built this sort of technology which could start to inventory some of that. It could start to basically, you could do established relationships. It could be used to detect lineage. You could do semantic commonality. You could map processes and things like that. And that technology, which they marketed commercially as Axon, was the thing that they started. And that's the technology that we bought, and we put that into the Informatica portfolio and ultimately created a service from that on Informatica's cloud. So Governance Catalog is like the current version of iteration of that capability. So Darius had this very interesting sort of disposition about this, which is interesting coming from the guy who is my governance SME, which is he who governs best governs least. And I think what he meant by that was that often organizations get wrapped around the axle with the big G governance word, thinking that they have to document everything before they can execute anything.
Yeah.
And I think that's maybe a large part of the reason why a lot my data governance programs sometimes fail. Or I guess I would say more directly than that, to the degree that data governance programs fail, it's often a function of the fact that they don't know what good enough is. Right.
I would say it's also that they don't know what good enough is, but frequently, and I'm not saying that this is always the case, but frequently I've seen governance divorced from purpose and what that gets the outcome. So I don't know, the simple analogy I could use is like a lot of governance programs feel like the folks that went out early to a site to build the city, and they're setting all the rules before there's anybody that's moved in. It's, hey, we're going to talk about what you can do at the crosswalks. It's, y'all, we haven't even built the street. What are you talking?
Oh, so yeah. You mean, yes. Like great joy. Yeah. They're not a governance lease type team.
I would say definitely love what he said there about governance lease, governance best.
Yeah, I guess one extension point I would make about Darius's approach with this back in the day is that So if you think about what people were doing with governance back then with capital risk controls or with HIPAA reporting or things like that, right? Anything that requires regulatory attestation, that is the highest possible data governance bar. In other words, the documentation requirement, the attestation requirement is very high for BCBS 239 if you're a GSIB bank. But if you're standing up Lee's analytics model, and you just need some data and you need to make sure that data is good enough for my analytics, that bar is much lower. And the conflation of one with the other is where a lot of people, I think, get wrapped around the axle. You could do good enough for what the consumption purpose is, and that could be much lower than what you're doing for regulatory compliance, attestation, and things like that.
And yes and no. And here's where I think cloud changes the paradigm a little bit. So I'm gonna take a small counterpoint here and disagree. Okay. Maybe you slightly disagree with myself. So yeah, hot takes time. Yes. I think that a lot of people do, like the need to, what I have seen frequently is a knee-jerk reaction to governance is a fear of what could happen or fear of what did happen. Fear of what happened is I'm in a regulated industry, somebody leaked data. So therefore, I haven't really actually addressed the issue of why culturally the data leaked. But now I'm going to just lock everything down and just start doing a whole bunch of busy work, making it impossible to do work. And then the other one is like something did happen and I need to deal with it. But the other one is, and I think you and I use the same quote from Jurassic Park, is life finds a way. So if you don't find a way to make it easy, I have worked in some of the most locked down environments and was shocked at what people got away with doing with data.
Well, look, all these are GPT, right? That came out and people were some very big and very secure firms that just uploading docs to ChatGPT because life found a way.
For the loan. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, to your point, which is that, so in that sense, this is my hot take on your hot take.
Yeah. Right?
Which is that in the most locked down organization, what ends up happening is people end up subverting your governance regular paradigm, right?
Yeah.
Because they have a job to do. And they do that job because that's their job. The thing about governance, part of the reason why it's a dirty word, is because people perceive it as creating obstacles for them doing their job. But that's a totally wrong-headed way to think of it. Really, what governance should be doing is facilitating access and availability of data and ensuring the minimum standards for that data's consumability, right?
Yeah, it's like
getting back to the thing about the data product. Yeah,
I was going to say, it's, I keep forgetting which book, I always get them mixed up, but it's like the tyranny of the or versus the beauty of the and. So that's what we talked about, the good to great.
Yes, good to great, yeah.
Good to great. So good to great is the tyranny of the or versus the beauty of the and. So it's like in the past, we took the mindset on governance. We can either have governance or the wild, like the innovation. We could either have security or accessibility. No, we can have like security and accessibility. We can have security and innovation. Because just like a lot of the stuff that you've worked on, Ian, where we've made it a lot easier to catalog and generate metadata and do lineage and stuff. We don't have to manually build that anymore. We also can do least privilege, zero trust in our cloud platforms mm-hmm. these days. Very low cost compared to what we used to have to do. So you can hit that, even though kind of Maslow's hierarchy has been discredited, you can still hit the Maslow's hierarchy.
You can hit that baseline
much easier. And so that's where the counterpoint where I both say, agree and disagree with myself. Well, but I'm an and, I'm not an or. So I've got both sides.
To what I think is like the last dimension, I think that we've been doing a lot of work on here around the sort of formalization of the data product and the metadata in it, which is a big part of data's consumability is its availability or accessibility. Mm-hmm. So it's, hey, this data looks great. Oh, the quality is really good. Oh, a lot of people are using this data for the same thing I'm using it for. I mean, I want this. I need this for my team. How do I get it? I don't know. You're like, oh, I see this Power BI report. I'm going to click on it. And then it's, oh, we're going to get you access to that. And you fill out this form. And then it goes nowhere.
Yeah.
Right? And you're like, what happened? I've done this. Yeah. So the thing about
is stuck in a Dickens novel, all of a sudden trying to model the English bureaucracy.
I'm still trying to figure out where those notifications go. I'm going to find that guy. Hey, man.
Yeah, someday we'll all...
15,000 requests for your Power BI workspace. But I think the thing about it is availability and transparency around availability is a big piece of, I think, what makes a data product consumable. And I made this maybe Informatica, we're a data management company. It's a bit of tooting our own horn. But I think one thing I would say about it is that if you can, the metadata that you can use to do things like that, that you can use to do things like automate profiling or automate data protection, application, things like that, you can also use to facilitate provisioning and availability, right? Because basically you can say, if the user is going to use this data for this purpose, they want to incorporate this data into their analytics model. But that analytics model is sitting in a Snowflake instance that's in the United States, and I can't share the European citizen data across the borders, then I have to be able to do the X thing with it to make that available to them. And that's a function of your policy. And that policy can be actuated.
Yeah.
It can be actuated in the data engineering pipeline, and it can be automated. If you know what those rules are, it's not difficult to do. Whereas if you're just going to rely on the data engineer to make those decisions on their own, there's a lot of friction.
So Ian, the other hot take here is, are you talking about that in the future of data engineering is going to be all policy analysts and lawyers because ChatGPT is going to write all the code for us?
Well, I mean, that's the thing is you can write all the code and then you can't deploy it without the lawyer has to press the button.
Yeah.
I guess what I would say is that, we do a lot of automation. I don't think Informatica has looked at data management process where we haven't looked at it and saying, like, how can we automate? How can we scale this? Like, we love scale, right? Like, we love to, I'm going to mass ingest all of this data and put it on this, I'm going to front load this S3 with this thing. And it's going to be huge petabytes of data.
Yeah.
Right. It's like it's in our culture, right? It's like orange. But the thing I would say about that is that standardization is the handmaiden of automation, basically. And that if you want to automate any process, it would benefit you to make sure that process doesn't have a lot of bespoke variables that you have to account for before you automate it. And the degree that you can account for those variables in some Pareto 80% of the time, you can automate it that Pareto 80% of the time. And then your data engineering workload is reduced to just those things that don't meet those standardized criteria.
So I can tell you haven't worked in sales.
I thought I were selling right now. How's it going?
I say that. Let me, a little tongue in cheek, but let me say that to say it's so agree that there's a whole lot from standardization and automation and what we're able to do in ensuring high quality, repeatability and scalability of automations does come with standardization. But then we'll get to one of the other questions I have too for you But then the beauty of innovation and change comes from when we break standards or when we're taking what the 80% is and tacking on or 20%, that 20% might be 20% deviation from the standard process, but it generates, conversely, it generates 80% of the value delivered.
Of the net new value, right?
Of the net new value delivery. Yeah. Either net new value, or we might have like localization on things, right? Informatica, Databricks, Snowflake, Microsoft, Amazon, they all have local patterns in how they sell what is the standard suite of products, because customer mm-hmm. pains, geographies, everything is different. But loads of standardization. So then one of the other things we talked about is patterns of governance. From Ian's point of view, globally interlocalized Ian, we can pick how we've stubbed that one out. It's less about centralization of that governance is one of the things that you said. So talk a little bit about like that. So if we've been talking about trying to get data ready for AI, we mentioned, you know, the provenance, semantics, quality, metadata, mm-hmm. and governance. Then we talked a little bit about governance, you know, who governs best, governs least, and automation. But now this patterns of governance starts to get into the people aspect of things. So what are some of those patterns of governance? Why do you say it's less about centralization?
A more innovative company, if you focus on the standardization thing, which is kind of like an eat your vegetables type value proposition. We'll see how it goes over. But I guess I would say that to the degree that you can do that, it'll have that benefit. One of those benefits is people can work new problem spaces, which by definition don't have that standardization.
Yeah.
Creates that possibility. Now, this is where it gets to the point about the discussion we're having around decentralized or centralized data governance, right? And I guess I would be, the context in which we're having this conversation was around the data product as a principle of the data mesh architecture pattern. Mm-hmm. And data, we have a lot of customers, I guess I would say, that are incorporating, I would say, data fabric or data mesh as a sort of architecture pattern in their data ecosystems. But I would say that nobody starts out with the intent of creating a data fabric.
Yeah.
A data fabric is a response to the current lay of their data state.
Mm-hmm.
Like basically, like they're saying, everybody would, if you have one consolidated data lake and you provision all your data through a single lakehouse architecture and you're on one cloud platform, you win the prize because that's like, that's great. That's a great, your culture somehow allows you to basically wind down everybody else's data platforms and run everything through one conduit. But that's not what most of our global 2000 customers are confronting. What they're confronting is basically a situation in which cloud availability of this infrastructure has defrictioned its consumption across a number of business lines. Everybody has their own shadow IT. They can buy some Azure and some GCP and some AWS
and whatever else they want to. Yeah. And there's and innumerable other cloud providers that are coming up, right? Like it's the worst being marketing departments by far.
Yeah. So I think one of the things I think I really appreciate about that we were developing Marketplace kind of concurrently to Zimar Degani's blog and then subsequently a lot of the thought leadership she's put out about that. I don't know her personally, but I follow her stuff. And I would say that it was convenient for us because we had a metadata representation of a data product that answered very specific questions for our customers about how they might do that. But a lot of it isn't technology specific. It's culture, right? It's mm-hmm. people process. So the thing that she was getting at was you just have to recognize that you're going to have different data platforms in your organization and that you have to federate the compute and execution. And you have to have established line of sight into the ownership of that compute and execution. And then those principles need to be part of the way that you think about how you're going to deploy. And I think that was a very insightful, that was a very insightful way to go about it, especially at a time where everybody was like trying to like race onto the cloud at the same time.
Yeah.
So I guess in terms of this thing around local governance, what I would say about that is that if you can leverage the existing investment and use the metadata to determine the utility of one platform owner's data for the purposes of some other platform owner's business problem, that's a much better way to go than to try to get both those business owners to standardize on a single platform. And if you can support this sort of mutability or transmissibility of the data on the basis of, like we were talking about before, specific governance guardrails, specific conditions that can be described and in the label of the data product, you're going to have much easier time trying to support data sharing within your kind of complex organization than you would if you were going to try to force everybody to move, because they're never going to move. that's the reason why they're there in the first place.
And I wouldn't say never going to move, but it's harder to move, to your point. It's harder to move. And I like that, because that was Ed Kelly, who's first chief data officer for the state of Texas, took a very similar approach when he was, because one of the first things he did is, like, all these different agencies were allowed, or are still allowed, to do their ways of managing their data. So it's, okay, let's just take a step back. And the first thing we're going to do is standardize how we talk to each other and what we do to share data. And it's like memorandums of understanding. It's very expensive and slow to get lawyers involved. And guess what every agency had to do when they wanted to share data was
involved. Get lawyers involved. Yeah. Because they were adjudicating it in real time because they had not set up any
they didn't
any
have,
standards, right?
They had standards within the agency, but not across agencies. And in some of the larger agencies, they didn't even have standards inside the agency. So they might have standards within departments. So yeah, so it was one of the first things. It's like, all right, y'all, let's try to get to a standard way of doing this so that we shorten the conversations. Everybody knows what baselines of success and how to work together. So let's not sit there and worry too much about how you might share data. Let's just agree on what we're going to do about this, right? And what we're going to do about working together. So no, I love that point. You get to see some interesting things in the market in your long tenure at Informatica and the things that you get exposed to globally. So as we wrap up, what are a couple of things that you are researching or looking at that are worth either a future podcast or future discussion on?
You mean I might get invited back?
Yeah, you may, maybe.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
So I thought this was it. No, we'll see how it goes. But that's a good question. I guess I would say, like I said, I've been in the software business for a very long time and data management business for a long time. So I guess compared to the demographic of your other guests, I would be considered to be an old timer. But I have to say, I've never seen anything quite like this sea change that's going on around AI and generative AI in particular. And I guess the thing I would say about it is that I feel like anybody who is interested in getting into this space, now is a great time.
Yeah,
to get into this space, because there is a lot of very interesting things happening here. And I could see this space being completely different in 5 years.
Next year. So
Yeah. I mean, so I think, I mean, it's kind of, in that sense, it's sort of a great time to be here. I think that a lot of what we're doing, just with regard to LLMs and the deployment and utilization of LLMs in our space, data management is a hard discipline. It's a hard one to automate. But it does adhere to specific patterns. And those patterns, if you have sufficiently enriched metadata, and I think we have something like 46 petabytes of metadata that we offcast from Informatica execution in our cloud, you can infer certain things with those patterns. And those inferences are quite interesting. Now, the one thing I would say about that is that to be able to access those inferences and be able to do anything with them, we've had to be very judicious about how we use that metadata. And one of the things that we're very specific about is we only use metadata that it does not disclose any personally identifiable information, does not disclose any proprietary information about the customer, and this is all spelled out like in our agreements on the cloud. So that pattern data actually becomes very abstract, and training a model on it is actually quite interesting. So having CLEAR in Informatica has been very useful for us because it allows us to advance a commercial product, but also then understand the practices of developing machine learning and developing applications of machine learning like GPTs or Copilots for that matter. And that's been a very interesting exercise for us. And we've had a lot of learnings from that, I think. Both in terms of like the potential utility of data for this purpose for training and things like that. Also, what we might be able to do with that. Now, the thing I would say about that is that the governance layer that we've had to deploy to be able to use CLEAR, I think, is repurposable. There's this kind of other dimension of AI governance that I think is a focus for us that we've been doing a lot of work around, a lot of thought leadership around. And that, I think, is the next frontier for Informatica as well, is being able to enable organizations to be able to deploy AI safely and to be able to safely, safely, ethically, accountably, in all the all the ways in which you want any type of business process to operate.
Yeah.
Right. And that there's a way to do that. And once again, I think the thing that comes to the rescue is the metadata reveals it. Like you can interrogate what's going on inside of your training harness. you can interrogate what's going on inside of your notebook, and you can see, hey, is this thing working? Is this thing deviating from what its expected behavior was in the training runtime?
Yeah.
What is its level of deviation in, right? At what level of deviation do I need to raise an alarm and do something about it? So that thing is the next thing for us. It's going to be very important for us. So yeah, that's where we're going. Awesome. That'd be very interesting to talk about, actually.
Yeah, that would be. It would be. And then you can wear one of your other t-shirts. Maybe you got the Atari. You're rocking the Atari
the Godzilla
one, today.
One. Yeah. Godzilla. So we can do that. Yeah.
So Godzilla. Yep. All right. I don't know. That might not be a great metaphor for...
Eat your data for breakfast. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, something like that. Awesome, Ian. Thanks for making the time today.
Hey, this was great. I really enjoyed it and would be happy to do this anytime with you guys. So.
All right. Awesome.
Lee, Sid, take care.